the Lately in PHP podcast. This is episode 28, and after a long struggle to schedule the recording of this podcast and facing all the technical challenges that month we need to deal with Google Hangouts, finally I think we're going to make it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, hopefully.
but this time we managed to record it, and we're going to start it. So, Larek, to start as usual, greeting Hernani for once again making to come back to the podcast. It's always a difficulty.
Yes.
How are you doing, Hernani?
I'm doing great, despite the issues, power outages, internet lacking my ISP, lacking my internet. So, and now a working machine. So hopefully this will be the future.
Google Hangouts always requires a modern computer with a powerful CPU, probably no less than a Core i5 or similar. And if you don't use a powerful enough CPU, the recording starts becoming very blurry. And I hope the image is coming okay this time to our listeners. So this month we have several interesting topics to talk about, and before moving to the usual news about the latest developments of PHP, recently I found an article in the VentureBeats site. Let me see if I can share the screen so you can see it as well. Hang on. And basically this article is mostly an interview with Andy Gutman from Zen. And it's a bit curious what they say about it. I don't know. Can you see the picture of the...
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, because on my end it's totally black. But if you can see it, I hope it is coming okay in the recording. And this article, as I said, it's an interview with Andy Gutman. There are many topics they cover regarding the apparent loss of popularity of PHP, which in reality is not just PHP, it's just other language became more popular outside of the usual scope of PHP, which is the web. And I think that is mostly to the growth of the mobile market. We can see that languages like Objective-C, that they do not show in the graphics, but I have seen it in the Google Trends graphics that Objective-C has become popular because the iOS development also became popular. Anyway, the thing that I wanted to comment about this article is that they seem to be interpreting something that Andy said about the future of PHP, which is related with mobile. And they seem to be interpreting it as if he is saying that there will be a version of PHP specific for mobile development. And I don't think that is the case. If that is the case, it's totally news to me. Anyway, this seems to be just an interpretation of the reporter, because as far as I can read from the interview, nowhere Andy said that there will be a mobile version of PHP. I mean, a version that would be used to run native mobile applications like those that you develop with Objective-C for iOS or Java for Android and other platforms. And Hernani, did you read this article? What was your interpretation of what the reporter said?
Yeah, it's kind of fuzzy. And within the PHP community, I haven't heard anything. So I'd say that this is something out of nowhere. And I think somebody's like behaving here. I can't say anything else other than I don't know what is being put on their food, but hopefully this is this is not a plot of Monsanto as well.
Oh, we never know. Anyway, jokes apart, it seems the reporter was trying to figure something fantastic about what Andy said and interpreted it in a way that was sensationalistic, and in reality there is nothing sensational about what he said. Probably what Andy was talking about regarding mobile support from in PHP from Zend, it's probably some packages in classes in Zend framework that make it easy to develop web applications for mobile devices, I think, but still they are web applications. Well, I don't know if there is anything new specific for in the mobile world in the development of PHP. I think we would know already, because most of PHP development is public. There is really nothing secret about PHP development, or maybe something, some Zend product that we don't know yet, but I doubt that it is the case. Well, anyway, we'll have to wait and see if there are any surprises there, but I doubt that that's the case. And now we're going to move on with another topic. Now, actually commenting on the latest developments of PHP, the latest versions. I was trying to screen share here, which is always a challenge, but okay. I think it's coming now. Well, nothing unusual, just a few bug fixes that have occurred, and they have launched the PHP 5.4.7 and PHP 5.3.17 at the same time. Basically, just a few bug fixes, nothing that should worry you that to rush to an eventual upgrade. It's always good to upgrade to a version that is less bug-free, but sometimes newer versions have more bugs than previous, because sometimes it happens that what was fixed eventually broke something somewhere else. Anyway, just leave it that information here about this newer version of PHP. And let me stop screen sharing here, and just to move on with the podcast, and start talking a bit more about newer versions of PHP beyond PHP 5.4. Specifically, there are plans for PHP 5.5, which basically consist in features that were already proposed, and as you may see here, I'm trying to increase the font so you can see, probably read it. I'm not sure if it is readable on this small screen, and that Google Hangouts capture. Oh, basically, there was a message from David Soriapara, which was one of the maintainers of PHP 5.4, and he's talking about the work in PHP 5.4 and the plans for PHP 5.5. There are specifically mentioned there are things that are already were already proposed, and in some cases there are already some working implementations, features like the using the list argument, list function, and actually I'm not sure if we can call it a function, but the list probably operator with the for each statement to iterate over multiple parameters that come out of arrays, multiple values, and as well the generators feature that we have talked already about, and one new feature that is regarding having stronger passwords. on stronger hashing and verification of passwords using the PBKDF2 algorithm, and there is now an implementation for that in PHP, and all that is planned to be made available in PHP 5.5, and according to the plans, they intend to make it available. Well, this is just a guess when it will be available. They plan to make it make a first release about February and March of 2013. Well, this is just a plan. We don't know if the wall will still exist by
yeah.
then.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, jokes apart, anyway, the proposal is to hand over the release management task to Julian Poli, and which his role is to manage all the releases of 5.5 PHP. And well, I confess that I haven't heard about Julian until now, but if David Soriapara is recommending him, it's because he knows that Julian is up to the task. I think both David and Stas Malyshev, which was the other maintainer of the PHP 5.4, did a great job. It is not easy to put up with all the discussions and plan all the releases. Personally, it would be a job that I would not like to have ever, because it's complicated. It's not just that, it's just the discussions among the PHP community. You have to deal with all the disagreements and see what is the best compromise, and make sure that whatever passes represents the sentiment of the most well, at least the most influent core developers, and try to reach a solution that really takes PHP forward. I think they did a great job, as you mentioned before, and congratulations to them, and good luck to Julian for the upcoming versions of PHP, namely PHP 5.5, and if the world does not end, hopefully we'll have a bright future.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, regarding PHP 5.4 plans, that is mostly all that I've read about, and I also like to comment a bit about something that is being proposed, specifically by Nikita Popov. I opened here the screen already in the page of a proposal that he submitted, which is basically okay. Let me start screen sharing, if so you can see it as well. No, it didn't work. No, it's
sharing itself. Yeah,
that's what happens when you miss the window.
Loopholes.
I don't think I missed the window, but well, who knows? Well, I think you are seeing it already, the correct page.
Yeah, sure.
We increase the font so you can still read it a bit. Basically, it's a proposal to change the compilation process of PHP. Well, this is a bit confusing for some users that are not familiar with the fact that PHP itself is compiled. It's a compiled language, not compiled in the sense that it will generate an executable program like traditional compilers. Yeah, what it means is that first there is a phase that process PHP source code and generates a sort of bytecodes similar to Java bytecodes, but they stay in memory. It's not like there is an intermediary file that is generated like Java bytecodes that result from compilation of Java source code. And that process usually results some equivalent to Java bytecodes, which are called Zend opcodes. And the proposal of Nikita is to have an intermediary step that would split the process first, parsing the PHP and generating an abstract symbol table, which in short is spelled AST. And the idea here, if I got what his proposal is all about, is to have introduce new types of optimizations that would result of reprocessing the output of that abstract symbol table compilation. This is not a trivial topic. Probably many users that are listening now do not quite understand what I'm talking about, but it seemed to me that it was a good proposal. In the sense that would allow several things, including the better, more and better optimizations of the final code that PHP executed. Hernani, are you familiar with compilers and all this technology that when you run PHP code, it is implicit, but it happens on, it's something that happens and makes PHP run at a reasonable speed?
Yeah, for sure. I know some of the details about compilers, but not much in the sense of being able to write it on my own. But yes, I understand that having some approaches on that level would probably bring benefits to the PHP. Based off on my experiences writing C applications, I'd say that despite that C is fast and has lots of power, PHP benefits from it based off on the similarity of the syntax, as well as I'd say that the compilation of PHP, the process of bytecode generation, which is the parsing of the source code, is where the bottleneck relies. And this is probably... My could be crazy, but this is where I believe that most languages lacks performance out of.
Yeah.
And despite that, this is my personal opinion. And
right. Well, usually when you need to take the most of PHP in a production environment, what you need to do is to use a caching extension like APC or Xcache,
right,
or eAccelerator, one of those, because they allow to skip the initial compilation step. It would be silly to recompile PHP
on
every execution, and that is something that is over the years that has been complained that PHP does not ship with a caching extension. There is always sort of a struggle when that topic comes in the PHP internals list. I don't know, maybe this somewhat is related with the fact that Zend already also has a commercial product that does the same, and maybe they fear a certain loss of market if an open source version of a caching extension comes with PHP out of the box. Anyway, the extensions exist. If for some reason you do not want to use a commercial caching extension, you can always compile those open source caching extensions manually. That's something personally I do that for since many years. I have just changed a bit the versions. In the beginning, I used to use the Turk mmcache from originally from Dmitry Stogov, and then they moved on to actually Dmitry went to work for Zend. I got a job invitation, and somebody else took over the project and renamed it eAccelerator. But there are others like APC, as I mentioned, which is under the PHP .NET umbrella, and everybody could use it and not have this problem of the overhead of the recompilation. Anyway, what has been talked about here, AST, intermediary step, it's an additional step. It does not have to do with this the use of the caching extensions or not. It would be an additional step, like splitting the compilation phase into parts. First, the generation of the abstract symbol table that represents the PHP code that is being compiled, and then the processing of that abstract symbol table to actually generate the opcodes or bytecodes, if you prefer to use the Java nomenclature. And as Nikita proposed, the idea is to finally generate even better opcodes to make PHP eventually run a bit faster. I don't know how much faster it could run, but let's see if the proposal passes, because this is something that is being there is a call for votes. And let me see.
Yeah.
I don't think it the votes already started, still under discussion. But okay. Let's wait and see what comes out of this discussion. If it's not a trivial matter, probably most people would not even have the necessary knowledge to participate in the discussion. But that's just a topic, and we'll have to see what comes out of it. Maybe in a few months, if there is any progress. Well, moving on with the next topic of the podcast, I would like to comment a bit in an article that I wrote in the PHP Classes site. Let me try to screen share it here. Well, basically, I'd like to make two comments about this. First, this is an article that appeared in the PHP Classes blog, but is in reality part of a blog of a package that I have developed, namely an XML parser. That it's just a generic XML parser, but some time ago I decided to implement a sort of an enhancement that makes it more straightforward to compile. Parse, validate and parse XML. And I'll comment more about that. But the other comment that I want to comment first before that is the fact that in PHP Classes site, every package that is published is entitled to have its own blog. And every author can submit articles like this to their own blog. And there is an option if the author of the package feels that the article is interesting to other people, not just those that are interested in his package, can flag that article as featured. And it is submitted for moderation, and if it is considered to be useful to other people, not just the users of the class, as I mentioned, it becomes featured as part of the PHP Classes blog itself, so it gets even more exposure. And this is an additional way for developers that submit classes to the PHP Classes site to get more exposure. And regarding that comment, that is all I wanted to say. But now back to the actual article. I'd like to make a broader comment, which is regarding the way people develop classes. When you develop classes for yourself, you know all the code that you have written and the way it works. But when you share that code with others, they have to learn your APIs, what the functions and variables that you have used in your classes. And the less they have to learn, the faster they get into the class and start using it, take advantage of it. And the proposal of this class is to do something, well, it's not exactly in a single step, it's just a couple of steps, to first parse the XML, and second to validate and extract elements, information from the XML document. The traditional way of using APIs like DOM to process XML in general, it's a bit of a pain, because you have to find the nodes that you want to parse and then see the contents of those nodes, traverse those elements. And doing that for every type of XML document that you may need to process is tedious and requires a lot of code. And certainly that's not the ideal way. So what this class provides as an alternative approach is to have just a single call that you can invoke to parse the XML And then another call to validate and extract. That call takes as argument an array with parameters that tell what is the structure of the document that you expect. So the class just with a single call validates, actually checks if the structure is what you expect, and extracts the information from the nodes, the tags, and whatever you have there inside. And the parameters that you pass to that class just define the tags and how many times the tags can appear inside of an element. This is done using an associative array that is eventually recursive, nested. So you can define all the types of tags and their contents and how you expect them to be processed, including some validation rules that you can define there. And if the document is found to be invalid, it just fails. Otherwise, it returns a structure of data that contains the parsed data. And I'm trying to show you the document. All that data is returned, and it makes it very easy to process by your applications. Well, anyway, the point of this article regarding is mostly about this class, but I would like to make a broader comment, which is what I think would be better for developers to write their classes to make them easier to use, which would require the least possible knowledge from the users to start using them. In this case, it's just a single function call just to validate and extract, and you just need to figure the parameters that you need to pass, and all that is documented. And I think if you can do it with just a single call, why would you make the user to do the tasks that are necessary to use the class to using several calls? What I'm trying to propose here is to make simple APIs in the classes to simplify the development from those that want to use your classes. Hernani, I don't know if you have an opinion about this. What are your thoughts?
Yes, you mean regarding the parsing of XML and the functionalities about it, right?
Well, in general, the idea of making simpler APIs, in this case, it was for parsing XML. I'm going to write a new article. I didn't want to comment much about that because it is not out, so I have not figured all about I'm going to write. But it's basically about a new class that is meant to process all the interaction with OAuth servers. It's about a new class that I released, and the API is once again is very simple. Yeah. Just a few calls. You don't need to learn all the protocols.
Ins and outs.
Stuff.
Yes. I've been dealing with XML for an extensive time amount.
Yes.
And on my day-to-day activities, I still have to deal with XML, despite the growth of JSON format and mostly all JavaScript frameworks being integrated with JSON. XML still coexists, and for some web services, especially SOAP protocols and AXIS, which is the latest version of SOAP, the implementation Apache AXIS for Java, also outputs the contents in XML. And yes, having those functionalities such as this class provides makes the life of the developer very easy, because first of all, you don't have to go and traverse throughout the document to see when the element begins and when it ends, and having to externalize this inside of a utility class or a component or something else, and having a way of generically validating exactly parsing a document makes the life of the developer very, very easy. And this is what I like about PHP, because you can do so much with the... There is still too much to go through, and people are always trying to go into new stuff, but as you are doing here within this class, you're exploring the needs as it goes. And this proves that it's still required to have better implementations and better functionalities of such cases as XML in instance.
You have worked and still work in your day job,
yes,
so to speak, with Java. And I'd like to comment that what I did in PHP, it could be done in Java. There is no reason why it could not be done in Java. However, I'd like to make the following comment that I'd like you to tell me what you think from your perspective from a Java developer. The Java world tends to be more complicated, not because of the language, but because of the people that are involved with the Java world. They have a complicated mentality. What do you think?
Yeah, there is a convention. There is a convention of how to develop stuff and how to name classes and how many lines a method should have and how you should write your variables. You should try to use camel case, especially for variable declarations and methods.
The methods that they use, they try to complicate things. They try to make things that they will work even underwater on Mars and the situations that are not realistic. They are very complicated and do not were really not necessary, I think.
Yes, I agree with you. I truly agree that they focus on stuff because the idea of Java is to avoid repetition. So whenever you have two lines of code where you call a function or you call the exact same code, you should extract it and put it into a specific method.
Right.
So that's the principle of having components such as objects and stuff.
But that should reduce the amount of code that you write. But when you actually see a program written in Java, it's much more lines of code that you have to write to do the same thing in PHP. Where does that complication come from?
Yes, I can't say exactly if that statement is indeed true. When you have more lines. The thing is, of course, in Java you have to specify a type, and which in PHP you don't. So that on a declaration of a variable, especially, you would see if you name your variable the same name of your class, then you're probably having at least a double amount of code as if you would be doing with PHP, because you probably are typing an object that begins with an uppercase character and then a variable declaring that object. And then the new call, which provides a new instance of it. So I guess that this is where it comes from. Because Java is strongly typed and PHP is somehow dynamic because of the T-vowel, which is a part of the engine. Then it makes things a little bit more friendly to the developer compared to Java. Yeah. But in the end, those languages are very similar on the logic concepts. And I'd say that, yes, as you've said, things could be done that way in Java, but people try to focus on componentizing things. And I see that the most challenging effort to learn something in Java is that you have to know all the calls to actually accomplish one thing. And there are tons of different APIs to parse XML. So if you go with this sort of Java consortium, right, then you have specifics. But then you have open source implementations out of that. So it makes things a little bit confusing.
Yeah, well... As I said, what I did in PHP could have been done exactly the same way in Java. Maybe it would take just a few more lines because of the variable declarations, as you mentioned, but what I see the problem is more in the approach of solving the tasks. If you just want to parse and validate, actually validate and parse, validate and extract data from an XML document, why do you would you need two calls if you can do that in one call and eventually do, because you always need to do that. And,
yeah, in the end, it's just when you need to get things done, you can get things done in any language. I think that's when people are writing libraries, they tend to be more holistic and try to accomplish something with a more greater scope. But yes, for sure, when you need to get things done and to actually do what you need, you can do it way simpler than probably it's done already by somebody else.
Yeah, actually, this is not a complaint or let's say language war. It's not Java versus PHP. It's more being complicated against being simple. And I recall that, for instance, Ruby on Rails was started mainly because the developer did not like the way things are done in the Java world. Everything has to be configured with an XML file. Well, they replaced that with YAML files, which are more simpler to type. You have less text to open and close to represent the same thing. Now we have JSON. This is better than YAML because YAML is a syntax that it's not obvious to everybody, and JSON is based on JavaScript. Everybody knows it, and JSON is even better. But it's not just that. There are things like convention over configuration. Everything in Java, people, you have to configure this in an XML file or else nothing will work. The default will always require you to go through the XML configuration file pane. And that is just an example. It's from my point of view, it's not exactly PHP or Ruby versus Java. It's just what I said, being simple against being complicated. I think about that we would have a lot more to talk about. We could spend the whole shows talking about this. But we need to move on. And now we're going to move on to one of our regular sections of the podcast. First, we usually comment about the latest JavaScript objects published in the JS classes site. And let me just screen share here them. Well, the list, I hope you can see it well. Maybe I should increase the font. Well, from these latest, which ones would you like to start commenting about, Hernani?
Yes, I'd say normally we'd start to comment about the preferred, right? But I have opened here in my tab the I can begin with a crazy uploader.
Okay, can you actually share it?
Yes, I can do that. Give me one sec.
If it doesn't crash.
No, I don't think it will. Probably I was having a Windows situation with my Mac. I probably have to kill it and restart it. So.
No, please don't do that. It's the same thing on Windows. Sometimes the shared screen appears blank to me, and then I have to ask you if you are seeing it.
Oh yeah, let me see if that's the right window. Okay. Right, I think so.
Yeah, can you just increase your font?
For sure.
This thing is probably Control plus.
Yeah.
Key. Yeah, that's fine.
Fine or too big?
No, it's readable. I think you cannot increase it further because it will go out of screen.
Yeah. Yes, so this component is very well described here. It's a plugin for TinyMCE, which is a sort of a you can tell it better, but it's a sort of a brand already. The it's, MCE.
It's the editor, HTML editor. Yeah.
So you can upload files. I haven't seen much of it in action, but I could see it from the screenshots, right? And I'm opening them as we go through here. So you have a list of files. You can select number of files, and then you hit upload. And once you do that, you can see a preview probably of the file, right?
Yeah.
You can attach other files, and once you have a list of files, you can upload it and see the contents of the file, if they are images or something like that. And there are some documentations as well on how to set it up, which is very, very helpful. And I'd say that this kind of material is really, really necessary, because people which is learning, this helps a lot for them to understand. And the author here, Sandro, is a Brazilian. Sandro Alves Pérez did a great job here documenting this. This helps to show people how to probably create a component based off on JavaScript as well as the PHP side integration. And
it's both parts, because from JavaScript you cannot manage the files that reach on the server side, so he provided the PHP backend code as
yes.
well.
And it's probably a good example as well as of JSON web services, right? Because he is exchanging data between PHP side and JavaScript. And this is a very nice use case of uploading files, which is handling multi-part form encode data, which normally is not the usual way you integrate with the server side. So I'd say this is a very nice component. Congratulations, Sandro. Thanks for the contribution. So changing then to the next one that I chose to list here. It's also based off on uploading.
Okay. Can you please increase the font as well?
Yes. Sorry, I was zooming here, but
it's
from Arun Kumar. He's from India, and it's funny to have two components selected as a file upload component.
Yeah.
But it's really, really nice to see the two aspects of this the same behavior. This is a jQuery. Based plugin, right? So you can drag and drop files on the browser instance. It will detect the file and immediately engage an event, fire an event on JavaScript, or probably be ready to fire an event on JavaScript, which will upload the file.
Yeah.
And it can do multiple files or one file at a time, based off on the uploads that you do. And it's very nice to see. It's also exemplifying here the PHP files required to do this.
Yeah, it's
and,
just to receive the,
exactly.
the files on the server side, but that should be a regular PHP script, nothing special
right.
To handle the uploads.
Yes, but if you probably have a upload handler, by looking at this file, you can probably change on your own to adopt this. And probably these components can be merged together with the other component, becoming
right.
even a richer component, which probably offers drag and drop support as well as a tiny MCE integration.
Yeah. Well, basically, in the browsers that support drag and drop events, nowadays it's very simple, as long as
right.
they are compliant with the HTML5 specification for file APIs to give access to the contents of the files being uploaded using
right.
These APIs. So probably not a big deal, as long as the browser supports it, because for browsers that are older and do not support these APIs, nothing can be done about them. It will simply not work.
Right.
Well, anyway, well, on my part, I'll also like to comment on a couple of classes. Let me screen share it here. First, this one, from our most frequent contributor, Artur Sosinas from Latvia. As usual, he sends very impressive classes on JavaScript objects that do things that are often not trivial. In this case, what it provides is a means to generate presentation of text or images that have the color components displaced a bit, so you can see text or images in 3D. In the case of text, it's quite easy because the same text needs to be rendered in different positions. I think in the case that this solution was to present CSS3 shadow effects, so the shadow color is in one color and the main text color is in the other. I mean the separation of the RGB components.
Right.
Well, that's my interpretation because I confess that I am not a specialist. I was trying to see. Usually provides some examples. Let's see. Well, I think you can see it now that
right.
There is some displacement of the red and green and red and blue here.
Right.
And I think we will need to have 3D glasses to see this in 3D.
Yeah. But, the thing is, there is an anaglyphed way of seeing 3D. Although I can't see 3D because I was born with a...
you have sight problems?
Yeah, no, I was born with it, crossed eye. But I did an operation, yeah. And basically when you are you have crossed eyes, although you have it the minimum or the maximum, basically when you're young, very, very young, either you get it, the ability to see 3D, or you lose it. And okay. I can't see it very, very much as normal people. And
so that feature is disabled in your eyes?
Yeah, it's not. The thing is, it's not in the eye; it's in the brain. The brain process. There is the only thing when you have this ability to see 3D, your brain process the image as a single image coming from both eyes. And in
Does
my
that
case,
mean that you cannot
in my case,
see
yeah, I only have one core.
You cannot see 3D movies.
No, yeah, I can, but the sensitivity that I have. Is not enough for me to become a plane pilot in Brazil. Although within the U.S. I could fly, but here in Brazil the laws are very strict, and I can't be.
And you wanted to be a pilot, and you are sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Well, anyway, back to the topic here, just to show some examples of the image version of the output of the class. As you can see, there is some displacement of the components. I think he uses Canvas objects to execute. Provide this sort of image component, color component displacement. Anyway, well, as usual, congratulations to Artus for yet another impressive object. I hope he never gets tired of sending more components, interesting components like this and the others. And right. Now moving on to another interesting component.
I would say for him as a personal message to give the ability of a non-3D-able person to see 3D. That would be awesome as well.
Now you are asking difficult things.
No, I'm just joking. But yeah.
Well, anyway, moving on. Now talking about a new contribution, this time from Carl Holtz from Canada. Carl has been a frequent contributor, mainly of PHP classes site, but now he started contributing as well to the JS classes site with also impressive JavaScript components. In this case, it's a component that makes it easy to generate players that process entries from RSS feeds that may be audio or video entries, usually found in podcasts. And I think this process is some JavaScript sent by the server with all the information and generates the necessary player code that can be used to play podcasts.
I've been seeing this JPlayer component everywhere. Basically, most of the WordPress based blogs use this component.
Yeah.
So
actually, its object is not JPlayer. JPlayer is just an external library that he uses to present a video. I think I'm not
right.
Sure.
Right. This is what I mean. I've seen this component, the JPlayer component, everywhere.
Yeah.
So probably this is very useful to aggregate as a feature for JPlayer.
Yeah.
And hopefully the JPlayer folks are watching this and can use this as a
well I don't know, because it's probably this, from what I understood, this is sort of a complementary part of another class written in PHP that Carl provided on PHP Classes site to actually parse the feeds and serve some JavaScript to the browser to process the information, generate the podcast user interfaces without reloading the page when moving to another audio or video of a podcast. Well, that's what I got. I hope I'm not misinterpreting this. So congratulations for Carl's also for his contribution. And now finally, we are moving on to one last session on which we comment about the latest nominees to the Innovation Award. Actually, since we usually record this before the end of the month, but since we are already in the following month, there are already the nominees of the current month, but we need to first to talk about the previews. And Hernani, which of the libraries that were nominated in actually released in July and then voted in August and were announced the results in September, which I'm showing in here, which ones would you like to comment?
I'm sharing my screen again. And
don't forget to
increase my fonts. So here, probably another one. So the author is Pavel Kukov. He's from Bulgaria, which is not a common country here. So very nice to see someone from Bulgaria submitting components to the site. So as described here, this class can store multiple values in single cookies. And the values are stored in cookies encoded in JSON, so it can be easily sent to browsers across, and preserving data types, which is very nice. And I've seen some tricky things on special occasions where things are hosted on the same domain, but actually on subdomains. And for single sign-on purposes, if the single sign-on server doesn't give you the cookies all the time, you could probably use this components to store the session ID of the single sign-on server and keep it in another cookie. So you could use it later to actually, not to break the single sign-on functionality, of course, because that would be not allowed. Or wouldn't be a good thing to do, but you could keep logging history of the user and track the user's login times without having to give this hurdle to the database. And of course, there are the local storage APIs as well coming through as an HTML5 functionality, but it's still very early adoption, and having those possibilities to keep data types and store as a JSON format is very nice.
Yes, this has two main advantages. This approach from Pavel storing multiple variables in a single cookie. You can share information between the browser and the server, and all in a single cookie. So you don't have to be careful with the names that you use for cookies, because it is only one cookie will be used. And
yeah.
The other advantage, as which is related to what I just said, is you can since you can share cookies between the browser and the server. He also actually provided another component in JavaScript to do the same on the browser side, but so it's the complementary part. So you can use JavaScript to set cookies, not so the cookies do not need to be necessarily set on the on the server side. They can be set on the browser side. And you can exchange those cookies, and as long as you use both classes, I'm trying to share the class here. We commented about it in the last month, I think, if not mistaken. And it's basically an equivalent class that Pavel uses to do this cookie data sharing. And as you said, you can use it for purposes of sites that need to store information of multiple values. And in this case, since it's all serialized in JSON format, it preserves the original types, because when you use regular cookies, you only store text. And in this case, this is all serialized and unserialized in JSON format. You can restore the original types. So this is actually a well-thought couple of classes, PHP and JavaScript.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. And the other class that you wanted to mention?
Yes. Sorry. I was probably opening another... something not like this, but let me just restore this here and open this one. Class from David Barnes, and he's from Thailand, which is also a country that has nothing, that has a low level of submissions, and it's nice to see somebody from Thailand providing components to the website.
Yeah, it's not the first time, so it's good.
No.
First time from the same author.
Right, but it's nice to see that people are getting those classes submitted, and actually innovation, right? This is very, very nice. And I've never heard about this API before, but it's very powerful as far as I can tell. And
it's unusual, right?
Yeah, right. And it's probably tracking bad customers, so you should avoid them.
I think it gets data from complaints from providers. I mean, companies that have bad customers that cause all sorts of problems, like not paying their bills and things like that. And
right.
Well, in Brazil, there is an institution called Serasa that tracks the bad customers. That I think this is specific to the United States. I'm not sure. Anyway, it seems to be for similar purposes.
Yes, and it's nice to see that there is an API for that. I wasn't aware. And actually, seeing APIs being submitted, API clients being submitted to the PHP classes is very nice, because I don't see much. I mean, there are tons of APIs out there for services, social networks, for everything. Basically, if you'd look at the web, there are even API directories where you can find websites sharing information. And the amount of requirements, imagine if every developer having to integrate with Facebook would write their own API client, then it would be very, very bad. So it's nice to see that at least if somebody tries to look into a client that is done through PHP, they can use this component and benefit from it.
Yes, and as you said, actually there are many classes that access APIs. Sometimes they are not really APIs. There are some component that scrapes information from a website, which is not the same thing, but here in the web services category, there are over 500 classes to access remote sites for to retrieve some information or access some service. But as you said, this is interesting because it is innovative and it really enhances the value of the site when there are authors that provide access to different APIs than those usual that are made available there. And on my behalf, I would like also to comment on a couple of classes. I'm just trying to open the... I'm trying to access them here. Okay, I think this and on screen sharing. Okay, let me see. I think you can see it already. It's already
yes.
In the largest font size that I can increase it. Well, again, this is yet another class from Carl Holz. As I mentioned, he's a regular contributor of PHP Class Society. He already submitted 7 classes, and this time it's a class that there are similar classes, but for this purpose of combining multiple CSS files in a single file, but this has a detail that makes it special. Otherwise, it would not be innovative, which is the fact that CSS styles that have images, usually they reference the image that is on probably in a remote server or in the same server, but it is a separate file. And what it does, it processes those styles that reference images and replace the URLs of the images with the data URLs. So those data URLs actually contain the data of the image file. So those CSS files do not need after processing with this class, do not need to the remote image files anymore because the image data is included in the resulting CSS file. So this is quite a clever class from Carl that submitted now. Once again, commenting about Carl's contribution, from 7 classes that he submitted, 6 were considered innovative, and well, that's a quite impressive track record. And I hope he continues to focus on submitting innovative classes because this is what enhances the value of the site, as I mentioned before. So kudos for him for this contribution. But now talking about another class from yet another frequent contributor, this time Tom Schaefer from Germany. Tom has even a more impressive track record. He sent 32 classes so far, and 9 of which were nominated to the Innovation Award, including this one. And actually, one of them was winner one of the months. It was not this one, but anyway, this class, what it does, is also related with CSS, but it's not exactly the same purpose. It's quite different. I don't know if everybody's familiar. There is this LESS language, which means linear CSS, which is basically a language. It's a sort of twist of CSS that allows to have variables in the definition of the values of the CSS properties. So what this class does is to take a specific style sheet that you give it as input, and it generates a process of the style sheet in the LESS format that figures which are the most common constant property values and replace them by variables. And this is a good starting point to make to migrate your CSS style sheets to the LESS format, so they are processed on the server side, and eventually they make it easy for you to, for instance, adapt your page layouts to different screen widths and eventually to different devices. For instance, if you are developing a web application for a mobile device and you know the size of the screen, you can adjust all the properties in the CSS definition according to the size of the screen and make it all adjusted using less syntax and the variables to make eventual calculations to adapt to the screen size. And I think this is a quite interesting approach implemented here by Tom. Kudos for him for this yet another great contribution. And I think on the part of the Innovation Award we are done with this month. There are several other classes, but unfortunately we do not have much more time to comment about them. I just would like to finish this podcast. Thank you, Hernani, again for making this extraordinary effort to record yet another great podcast with the Google Hangouts. And so far, the connection did not drop, and we are at the end. I think it will not drop. But, yeah. Well, on my part, that's all for now. I don't know if you have any final remarks.
No. I'm pretty happy that we've had a smooth one. Hopefully, this new machine will help us. And yeah. Hopefully, I'll be settled in a new address soon, so things can be even better.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone, for the time being. Thanks for the submissions from the contributors. Keep sending good stuff, and I hope to be back 100% next time without any hassles.
Yeah. Well, on my part, that is all for now. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.